and welcome to the Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soups. Time to get fired up. Make sure you find the Raptor Show wherever you listen to podcasts. Please rate, review, subscribe to the program. I'm your host, Wayne Blue. I'm joined by co-host Blake Murphy. Blake, how you doing, man? You all right?
I am good, yeah. Left our show yesterday, went down to the Dome, which was a really fun game for a couple of innings. And then it was, disaster in extra innings, but we move. They lost 6-1 in 10 innings.
You know who else we had a very brief conversation about the Blue Jays with is our guest today.
Not on air, though.
Not on air, but beforehand, we talked to Garrett Temple, and we came in a little bit earlier today to catch up with Garrett. And, it was a really riveting interview, as always, and here it is. The Raptors forward, Raptors guard, Raptors center. Garrett Temple, what's going on, Garrett? How you doing, man?
What's going on, man? I'm great. How y'all doing?
We're doing really well. We got to start with the really unfortunate, man. We got to start with the last play of last night's game against Brooklyn. You guys were down 2, shot clock turned off. Brooklyn had the ball. Enough time to play for the steal. You did get the steal on the rookie against Clowney. And then you try to take it the other way to force OT or at least tie the game. Unfortunately, the rookie can really get up. He had 7 blocks last night. That's really impressive. But take me through the last play of last night's game. Not to wake you up with some bad news, but, you know, we had to go there.
Nah, yeah, it is what it is, man. It's the only question that should have been asked. Got the steal. Pushed it. And it's simple. I should have. I knew it was the rookie. I like his game, by the way. He's gonna be really, really good. I should have pump faked him. Simple as that. Hindsight is 20/20, but even foresight should have been 20/20 because after you get a steal like that, his mindset is I gotta make a play. Mm-hmm. And he's athletic, he jumps at everything, he's gonna try to block everything. So in that regard, even if it's 7 minutes left in the second quarter, you know. You pump fake them. You pump fake him on that one. You do a Rondo version, or you do. I get my inner Gary Trent on the fast break, or inner Kelly Olynyk, and you just pump fake him. That really hasn't ever been part of my game a lot, especially in the paint. But I should have brought it out there. So I tried to quick lay him. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it didn't work. Darko was trying to call for a foul. During the timeout, he asked me, did he foul you? I said, no, Darko, you just pinned it against the glass. But he's like, that was clean block, as clean as it gets, man. I should have pump faked. So that was what that was. And then Dennis finished with those free throws, and we never really had a chance.
What was kind of, and we've asked you about Dennis before, but that it seemed like it got a little testy with Dennis at some points in that game. Is that just, hey, it's an ex-teammate? Was he talking some trash? What was going on there?
No, that's Dennis. I mean, ex-teammate that talks a lot of trash, that gets testy, whoever he's playing against. It could have been his son that's, you know, 17 months. It would have got testy. That's just how Dennis is. I'm saying Dennis playing against his son. When he gets on the court, that's the competitive nature that he has. That's part of what makes him who he is. So, nah, it was just Dennis. And it'd be a little bit of an ex-teammate, but and us giving Dennis some stuff, us knowing how how he gets. So when Ochai scored on him, just us knowing that we wanted to, you know, how he would feel after we stood up and said something. So
yeah, watching through the TV, I thought that was the inciting moment. You know, when Ochai had like what looked to be like a 5-second Mark Jackson style post up against Dennis. He took his time against him. Okay, no help came from any of the Brooklyn Nets. Got the and one. Ochai is like very strong. Obviously, you know, he's bigger than Dennis as well. But it happened right in front of the Raptor bench, and you saw everybody get up. You know, Gary, Scotty, RJ, Bruce, the whole team, you know. And from that point onwards, I saw a different focus from Dennis, I got to say.
Yes. Yes, you did. I mean, I stood up too. I had just come out. And then I sat back down eventually because I said, I'm going to go back in the game, so let me get some rest. But I looked at the bench. The entire bench was up.
Yeah.
And, but that was great. That's part of the game we're in. That's part of the game. And I think our Raptors social posted it as well. Mm-hmm. And Dennis commented because Scotty did the baby sign.
Oh, yeah? Oh, you know, man.
So then Dennis commented, the baby got the last laugh, or the baby got the game, you know, ended the game the right way or something like that. Yeah. I was with him last night. So nah, it's part of the sport, and it's what makes our sport great. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, I love it, man. For game 80, that was really spicy. You know, game 80, both you guys, the season's over in a week. But
it's just like really nice in 2024 to see you guys run a play to get him the post up. He loses the ball. He's still posting up. He covered like the entire 2-point area on the process of that one post. It was just very nice of nice to see some 1970s stuff there.
Yeah, for sure. Well, listen,
for sure. We've
seen a lot of you, Garrett, in the games. We've seen the compete level rise. We saw you got the start last night as well. I guess this is all going to be something that's going to be covered probably in a week or so when we do exit interviews. But are you down to play another season with the Raptors? Like, you know, you're becoming a Raptor fan favorite at this point. Like.
No, I appreciate that, man. I am. I really am. This last 3 weeks, when you don't play, I didn't play at all, you know, in the rotation last year in New Orleans. The year before that, I was playing the rotation, and then I was out of the rotation. And this year, didn't see any minutes in the rotation. So, after a year and a half, 2 years of not playing in the NBA, just playing against a couple of players that are not in rotation also, and then some coaches that played overseas, maybe, you know, you start to question at this age, like, can I still play in this league? And this last 2 weeks, however as long as been, has shown me that I definitely can still play. My calling card has always been defense, and I feel like I still can really guard. Maybe these last basically two years of not having to compete and put miles on my legs has helped, but I really feel like I can still defend, especially, you know, having to guard guys like Cam Thomas and Mikal Bridges and I hold my own. So at the end of the day, I've always thought when I can't guard, that's when I need to, when I'm a liability defensively, then that's when I need to stop playing. And it's not that's not the case. I asked Dennis last night, why didn't y'all bring me into the pick and rolls last night, man? We're not messing with you. So that's a good sign. And that means I need to, I can still play. I still can bring something to the team that a team needs. So I'm definitely down to play with the Raptors. My family loves it here in Toronto. I like the organization a lot, and I would love to be back.
Is that something where, you know, the fact that you have been playing these last couple of weeks and looking like you can still play, when you're having these conversations with the Raptors or with other teams, you know, I remember Vince talking about at the end of Vince's career, you know, part of why he chose Sacramento, there were rumors the Raptors would have been interested to bring him in on a minimum or something like that.
Right, that's a playoff team at that point.
Yeah, but part of why he wanted Sacramento was, like, there was going to be playing time. Like, they were going to give him 20 minutes. They also gave him $8 million instead of the minimum, which is probably a factor there. But, you know, to hear him tell it, the playing time was a part of it. Is that something you'd seek out a little bit more, or it's just kind of more for you? You know, if you're called on, you can do it.
Well, I mean, obviously, if playing time is in there, that's definitely a factor that I'm going to consider. And it will be high up on my list, for sure. And I was on the team with Vince when he went there, and he could still play. Like, that was what it was. So he wouldn't have wanted to be on a team that wasn't playing him. That's only one of the things that I would, you know, decide on. Obviously, there's others, but playing time is definitely something that if a team is like, yo, we want to play you, actually, we're not going to just have you as a vet. At the end of the day, this is what we love to do as hoopers, compete at a high level and on the court. And if that's something that somebody's willing to throw out there, that's definitely something I consider.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to go back to what you said earlier, too, about that feeling of, like, doubt that does creep in sometimes. I'm sure a lot of this game for professional athletes, when you're competing at the very highest level, it is about managing that belief, managing the confidence. And then, of course, on the flip side of that is managing the doubt. So, you know, what are some instances in your career where that's crept in for you, besides more recently? And have you seen instances of that affecting the careers of other players who had a lot of talent but, you know, couldn't get over that doubt portion? Yeah.
Man, that's a great question, Will. For me, that's the biggest time was when I got cut by the Miami Heat in training camp after I was there the entire training camp, almost the entire summer, and I was the last cut. This was
2012.
2012. And they picked a guy, in my opinion, who should not have, I outplayed in training camp, but he was there the year before. And, I was overseas the year before, so I was going to start the season out in the G League again. And overseas just wasn't for me. So I was, in my head, I was thinking, am I an NBA player? Am I, even though during training camp I played well, I was in preseason games, I was playing well. It was still just, do I belong in this league? That 8 or 9 games I spent in the D League that season, G League now, showed me that I do because I was playing really well. And one time I played against a first round draft pick in the D League, and the GM for that team, it was the Suns. They had a draft pick, and the GM for the team was there. Rest in peace. Babby was the general manager, and he came to watch him play against me. They had sent him down, and he was playing in the D League, and I was cooking. And I was thinking to myself, if he's a lottery pick, then I definitely deserve to be in this league, in the NBA. So they're definitely there. They come in. Circumstances obviously initiate them, but that was the time when I really questioned, more so, is this for me? Do I deserve to, am I an NBA player? And then that's the year that I ended up staying for the rest of my career.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing. I feel like maybe even for some of your teammates right now, with so many guys coming in and out, like I'm sure in their personal moments, they're thinking about these very questions, right? Like, you get this chance, am I gonna stick? And we've talked to you so much about that because of your journey. But yeah, I always wonder how athletes maintain their confidence, besides the fact that they're, you guys are supremely talented and athletic or whatever, but you guys are also human, and this is a really high pressure job, so.
So how much this is, I don't know. I don't know if you don't remember the guys' names or you just didn't want to name them by names, but I know who you're talking about in both of these instances. How much, and I don't know if you ever got to play against these guys again, but like if that came up, how much does that, like, I don't know, if you played the Heat later that year, once you got on the Wizards, are you looking across at that guy or that team or, at any of the teams that kind of had you in and thought, nah, we're going to go a different direction? Like, how much did you carry that as you moved forward and got to new situations?
Man, when I got cut, this is the first time a coach told me, man, we're going to try to figure something out, but if you play against us, man, just do your thing, like cook. But, they actually circled back when I got caught up by the Wizards. They circled back and told me that they would like to sign me first. And that's a big story, a big kind of like changing point in my career. I had to decide between the 3-22 Washington Wizards or the defending champions and with LeBron, and they just added, Ray Allen. So, and I decided it with the 3-22 Washington Wizards because I wanted to get a chance to actually play. So it's in the back of your mind. It's definitely in the back of your mind when you play against these teams. And it's something that comes with, it wasn't as bad since they kind of like wanted to get me back. In terms of the players, there was obviously no ill will. But as competitors, maybe add a little coal to the fire.
Yeah. I mean, it's always fun watching these, I wouldn't say revenge games, but it's a little bit more on the line. I feel like Bruce Brown's best games this year, going against Denver, going against Indy. I thought he played well the other night too. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
And
he really
Dennis
did.
coming against the Raptors is, there's always a little bit extra, but it's just the natural part of competition.
This is also
you play
why
against your friends.
This is why Garrett's having a good season. He's played for half the teams in the NBA, so half the games are revenge games.
This guy's like, it's Brooklyn.
The teams have the coaches. Yeah, right. Exactly.
No Sean Marks.
New York, it's New Orleans.
Yeah. Hey, listen, we were talking about this before we got going, but there's an excellent piece about you out there written by Eric Kareen over at The Athletic, where he does this once a year where he spends a week, a day in the life kind of thing, and he spends a week covering just what goes into being that player for that week. And I saw you talking to Eric quite a bit. I figured you were going to be the guy that was going to be profiled. And it's really, really wonderful. It gives a lot of people a lot of insight into who you are just in general, what an NBA player goes through. And a couple of things stood out for me from that piece. I want everyone to go read the piece, so I'm not going to like stomp on the story. I just want to ask some follow-up questions. One of the details in there, one of the days you spent was making candles with the Olenek, okay? So, take me through the candle-making experience. And also, what's it like when, because Kelly said this in the piece, and he's quoted, he's saying, well, I can only really ask Garrett because none of the other guys are married. And there is a big age gap, you know, between, like, obviously what married people would do versus, like, what, you know, let's be honest, young 20-year-olds would do. So what's that age gap like, too? But we'll start with the candles.
For sure. Great question. No, and shout out to Eric. You know, as a guy in this situation, you've had people write stories about you. His was at the, you know, tops. You know, one of the best ever, and I really appreciate him for, you know, choosing me and getting that insight. A beautifully written story. Kelly texts me randomly on one of the off days around 10 in the morning and said, "Gee, man, wifey and I are going to the can to make some candles. Would you and wifey want to come?" And I said, "Can't make candles." So I immediately. This is not something that me and Kelly would go do on our own. Like, I'm broke. I'm about to go make candles.
Oh, yeah.
And I are going. Would you and your wife want to come? You know, I think he might have put in the text, you know, women, they live for these things. I was like, for sure they do. So
Kelly's just like, let me make these candles real quick.
Right. I hit the wife right away. I was like, hey, baby. Kelly and his wife are they invited us to do a candle making thing with them. Would you like to do it? Of course. Yeah, I'd love to. That would be great. Nice little date night. So we did it. And it was in Yorkville. I've never been in a candle, like specifically a candle shop before. We drank some tea before, or some coffee if you wanted. They had wine. I don't drink alcohol. So I didn't do that. But it was us four, another group of two, and then another group of two.
And they're probably like, wow, we got to meet NBA players at the candle making shop. I know they were in for a treat.
Honestly, I don't know if the people that make these candles that are like going to these candle making classes probably aren't crazy sports fans.
Okay.
Like,
you know what? Fair.
They didn't seem as if they were very starstruck, or maybe they just were very calm about it. It was good. You had to pick 3 cents. I guess three parts of your scent. So you put three scents together, and there are five choices in each, I guess, area. So you pick, I don't remember the names of it, but we had to smell each scent by itself. And then you put them together once you pick the three that you choose, and you have to fan them against you to smell it as if the candle was, it was very interesting. We poured the wax, you have to stir it a certain way, and it was dope. And then you pick what color, I guess, casing you want the wax, the candle to be in, what color glass. It was dope. I was happy about it. I was excited to light it. They told us not to light it for 3 days. So I lit mine first. My wife wasn't a fan of the smell of hers when it wasn't lit necessarily, but hers smells better lit than mine does. We loved the way mine smelled before it was lit. It's a little too strong, though. So that was that. That's what that was. And I had a great time. I appreciated him for that. It was definitely got some brownie points for that.
It sounds like a good date night. Will you take notes here?
Trust me, I've done pottery classes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I have one tiny follow-up, though.
this is a standard thing, drink-making classes.
So this sounds like a nice night out with two couples. Did Kelly wear a snapback?
I believe, you know, when I picture Kelly, I always picture in the, picture him in a snapback, backwards snapback at that. Did he wear a snapback? I have to say yes, but he was dressed decent. Like, he was dressed like...
He wore a snapback on his wedding day. It doesn't matter how he's dressed.
Oh, well, he for sure he had one on it. Like, I can't see that he didn't. I believe he did, for sure. He had to wear one. Or what was this?
The age gap.
So when the trades happened, right? When Dennis and Thad got traded, and Otto, Dennis, Thad, and Otto got traded on trade deadline day. Wifey was like, nobody else on the team has kids, so me and Otto have daughters that are basically the same age. Me and Dennis have 3-year-olds that are the same age and babies that are the same age. Dad's kids are old. Mm. Dad's kids are like almost one is a teenager now.
Yeah.
But just having wives on the team that have kids as well, you know, Kyra still goes, my wife still goes and brings my daughter to a little tumbling gymnastics class with Otto's wife, with Natalie. You know, so just having that around was great for her, was great for me as well. Just to, you know, you have conversations about life and marriage and being a father. And then KO came, which was great because we met in Milan. Like, our wives met each other in Milan this past year at a Players Association event. So that was good, but we talked about it, how we have no players with, you know, with kids anymore, let alone married, but even married with kids. So it was definitely, I'm glad KO invited us out. But that's something that it's just me and him right now. So we'll see what happens next year if I'm back and see if we get anybody else that, that has an official significant other.
Man, Chris Boucher is the next oldest guy on the team. And it's crazy how young.
And let me rephrase. CB has a son that is a year. He's a year now. But that's the only one that has a kid.
That
but
really puts into perspective how young this team is.
No, I remember, like, okay, so post-game, after the game is done, you go down to the locker room, you do the interviews, all that kind of stuff, and then you see, like, you know, family milling about, you know what I mean? And it's like, this year I've seen more parents than I've seen kids. You know what I mean? Before it was always
the whole Trent family's there.
Well, yeah, that too. But it's like you used to always see Kyle Lowry's kids, DeMar's kids, and they were wandering around. Like, we've seen them growing up. They grew up. They, like, were born here. Right. They, you know, whatever. Nowadays, I'm like, oh, I see Grady's parents. I see Quickly's parents. I see RJ's parents. Exactly. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, exactly, damn, this is flipped entirely.
It's different.
Yeah.
It's different. And you asked about, like, the dynamic in general. Like, they're texting about, you know, where they're going to go out in a group chat.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm...
You're like, I'm not trying to go to STK right now. I'm not trying to go to Harbor 60.
I'm not going out. Celeste turns into a club at night. Like, I'm straight. Y'all got it, bro. I'm going to just chill. I just don't have it in me, man. I just don't have it in me.
Oh, man.
All right. I don't want to end on a negative note, but...
It's not a negative. It's just a funny thing. Are you going to...
There's one more question.
Yeah.
Okay. There's the other thing that I wanted to know from Eric's piece. Obviously the Jontay Porter situation is ongoing. We'll see what happens there. I think Eric mentioned that you had actually reached out to him and just sort of checked in on him to see how he was, you know? So I guess my question is, like, how is he and what did you say to him in the midst of all this?
It's exactly as Eric put it. In situations like this, what I said to him was Happy Resurrection Sunday. Praying for you and the fam, man. Him and his wife. And I left it at that. I think in situations like this, I don't like to ask questions. I don't like to pry.
Mm-hmm.
I told him I'm here for him if he needed me. And he responded. He said, I appreciate that, man. You know what I'm saying? Happy Easter to you as well. And that was really just it. And, you know, in the days ahead, I'll probably send a quick text just checking on you, seeing how you're doing. No reply is needed in those scenarios, but it's just a situation to, it's just something to do just to let guys know you're not, you know, we didn't forget about you, bro. Or I didn't forget about you. I'm, you know, if you need to talk, we're here. Mm. And it's not as if you're a pariah, you know what I'm saying? Mm. We're leaving you on an island. I'm still here for you whenever, you know, if you want to chop it up. So that's really all that was. And I know I've been in a situation, obviously not like that, but I've been in situations where, you know, life goes on, the team goes on, things happen, you know, even with injuries, and it's the third or fourth week of your injury, and they go on the road and you stay home for a week, and it's like, dang, I haven't heard from my squad. So obviously this is different, but just hearing, seeing a text message from a teammate, mm-hmm. I can imagine it feels good. So just that's all that was. And he seemed as if he's doing okay. So we'll see how this plays out.
So you're doing that because you're a good person, you're a teammate and things like that. The situation in general, and when Adam Silver discusses it yesterday and talks about the, you know, the discipline he has available to him if the investigation turns out a certain way, Jonte and him being your teammate aside, you as a ranking member of the union, how much are you guys as the MBPA kind of keeping an eye on this because of the precedent it could set if it does get to somewhere where there's discipline?
For sure. No question. I mean, in my capacity with the union, in my capacity as a veteran in this league, in my capacity as just an NBA player, where, you know, everybody's keeping an eye on this to see what that precedent could set. And because it's something that hasn't happened in our league. So we're very much paying attention, and as a union member, we're obviously making sure that everything is, you know, the investigation is fair, and he's not out there, you know, Jonte is not out there to be made a bad guy if nothing comes to fruition in terms of him being found guilty of it. So it's a difficult thing to navigate, but as all of those, you know, I guess people, I'm keeping a deep eye on this to see what happens.
For sure. Well, Garrett, we appreciate you so much for joining us on the Raptor Show. I think this is the last time because the show's ending when the season's ending too, but just want to say appreciate you so much for taking the time. I know this is early in the morning, everything like that, but you've been great to speak to. You're clearly, you know, somebody who has so many interesting things to say. I'm curious to see what you do next, if it's come back to the Raptors, if it's stay in the league, if it's coaching.
And if you come back to the Raptors, we're running this back season two.
Yeah. I mean, that's come on, man. But, you know, still, just wanted to say appreciate you. And, I mean, good luck in the last two games of the season. I'm very curious to see what game 82 at 1 p.m. in Miami looks like. But
you and me both. My family's coming down, the kids and all that.
Oh, that sounds great.
I think a lot of people have a lot of people coming down. You know, at one, I should play a lot. I'll tell you that much. I think I may be able to play a good bit.
Yeah, you get your rest for that one for sure. I'm just worried about the other guys, the younger guys.
I know. Nah, but it'll be really good. I really appreciate you guys as well. And mark me down if I'm back here next year. We got a date every week. I'm with it. Let's get it.
Perfect. All right. Thank you, Garrett.
Thanks, man.
Appreciate y'all, man. Have a good one.
Yeah. Thank you, Garrett. Seriously. That was, it was just great to speak with Garrett all season. It's been a real privilege, to get that kind of insight and access with the team. We had that before, obviously with Dennis as well. But, I think with Garrett, it's like, you could tell based on the way he speaks and you sit and have a conversation with him, like you could tell kind of what he's about, how kind he is. Even the thing with the Jonte situation, the fact that he's still reaching out just to make sure that he's okay, just to make sure that he's, you know, just showing that he's thinking of him, I think it was a very kind thing for him to do. So salute to Jonte Porter, but salute to Garrett Temple more than anything else. We did ask Garrett about the block last night, and the Nets did block the Raptors quite a bit. And it is time now for the spicy stat of the day, brought to you by new Chunky Spicy Soup. I already get fired up. Okay, so
I'm not fired up about this one, man.
This is tough, but it is still a stat worth mentioning, okay? Malik Williams has played 76 minutes since joining the Raptors on a 10-day deal, which, by the way, does expire on Saturday before Game 82. So who knows? Maybe the Raptors will sign someone else.
Give me Marquise Noel for one game, even if they have to play Garrett at center for 48 minutes. Give me one game of Marquise Noel.
You know what? play Marquise Noel at center. Let's actually see that. But in any case, Malik Williams, he's gotten two starts. He's done a good job rebounding. He does lead the team with 30 boards since joining, including 14 last night. However, that is not the spicy stat. Malik is just 6-for-25 from the field, despite being left open on his jumpers and also otherwise living around the rim as a 7-footer. So this is your actual spicy stat. Malik has been blocked as many times, 6, as he has made shots so far, which is also 6. Last night, the reason this came to mind, he made 3 baskets and was blocked 4 times in the game that the Raptors lost to Brooklyn last night. That's your spicy stat brought to you by New Chunky Spicy Soup. Are you ready to get fired up? Anyway, we're going to take a break.
That's a little too spicy.
That was too spicy. By the way,
not to pile on. He shot 3-for-10 and improved his true shooting percentage.
What is his true shooting percentage right now?
25%.
That's extra
spicy. It was only 50% in the G League, which is not very great for a rim-oriented big in the first place.
It's been a struggle, though.
But yeah, it's been tough. The rebounding's there. You can see what the team sees defensively.
He competed.
But he's not there yet.
Yeah, it's fine. All right. We're going to take a break. I've been your host, Willow. You've been listening to The Raptors Show on the Sportside Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's New Chunky Spicy Soup. When we come back, want to have this conversation with Joe Wolfon about just the league's change in offense and adaptation on offense, and an article that Joe Wolfon wrote that was endorsed by none other than J.J. Redick. So stay tuned.
The best Blue Jays show out there, period. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to The Raptors Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm your host, Wim Liu. Continue to be joined by co-host Blake Murphy. Big thanks once again to Garrett Temple. What do you think Garrett's going to do next? You want him back on the Raptors?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Look, there's a role on every team to have like a steady bet like that, someone who is in a leadership role and can obviously still play a little bit. Garrett showing these last couple weeks that there is a little more juice still to his game than maybe we thought at the start of the year. But look, the Raptors obviously believe that and believe that there was an absence there kind of post-Kyle Lowry in terms of that voice in a room, and they loaded up on it this year. I don't know if you needed 3 of those guys and Thad and Otto and Garrett Temple. Obviously there were other reasons those guys were on the roster as well, but roster construction-wise, you don't want to commit too many spots to that, but one spot, absolutely. Someone who is, well-respected, can relate to especially the guys on the edges of the roster, but having been through it all, I think the union stuff is helpful to have in the room as well, as far as helping your younger guys learn ins and outs of the league more like logistically and lifestyle wise as well. So yeah, I would love to have him back.
Yeah, I really appreciated the fact that Garrett did talk about he you don't play for 2 years, or you're essentially, it's intentionally being made DMPs for 2 years. You do have that doubt and that sort of lack of confidence creep into you at certain moments. I think it's just being open and transparent about that. I mean, it's totally different for him to do that versus a younger player and a higher profile. But at the same time, you just rarely get that actual honesty into an athlete's mentality.
Yeah,
especially when it's negative. When it's positive, it's always whatever, but
Yeah, vulnerability is not something that comes easy to us in the sports space, especially on the player side, because that vulnerability, even if it's honest and it's something that's really relatable, can sometimes be seen as weakness. And that's
unfortunate, really.
Yeah, and it's not an accurate understanding of how humans work, but it's nice to have someone in Garrett's position who not only will do these with us and share that a little bit, but yeah, having that presence around other players as they learn, the league, but also how to operate as a human person in the league as well, is important.
Yeah, we're buying a little bit of time because we're trying to get Joe Wolfon connected and on the line.
Well, what about this? What if we text Joe Wolfon and we just say, Joe, talk for 15 minutes. You don't need to hear us. tell us about J.J. Redick. Did J.J. Redick DM you after?
Yeah, so the piece we're going to talk about
really good stuff.
Was up on thescore.ca, as with all of Joe's work, for a long time. I remember actually Wolfon getting hired a month after I got there, too. The three of us are all coworkers at one point.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, honestly, if you worked media in Toronto, you probably worked at the Score at some point.
Yeah.
Like, it's just how it is.
I was just, like, on an island there of, like, it was just me and Joe Cash doing basketball, and then there was, like, 315 hockey people and, like, 117 NFL people. I was like, give this me someone else.
Yeah.
Come on, let's get some blog boys in here.
Yeah, and then you got me into that door. Then Wolfong came in that door. John Chick, shouts to Chick.
Yeah.
As well. You know, we're just reminiscing about the Score. But in any case, this piece is up over there. How modern offenses blend old school tactics with new age skills. Joe Wolfon. First of all, how are you doing, man? You all right?
Yeah.
Have you figured out how to use Zoom?
A great day when I get to come on here and chop it up with you guys.
Yeah. Sorry. Once again, we have taken too much time in segment one, so we're leaving you with like 15. You're just coming off the bench for Garrett Temple today. It's okay. I hope you can accept.
I think it's more. I think it's more like Jody Meeks. My like 2 minutes at the end of the half, just to get in and chuck.
Yeah, well, you know what? Jody Meeks did get his name forever immortalized. When you go to Scotiabank from now until forever, you will look up and you will see Jody Meeks alongside of 14 other NBA champions from that year. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about your piece, and I thought the way you set it up was really, really good. And the topic was sort of, you know, the inefficiencies in basketball are largely gone. Like, three-point rate is kind of flatlining. It feels like we have hit, like, at least, like, tactically, what's the optimal amount of threes to be taken. Pace is also sort of flatlining as well. So those are the things that for teams that were looking to juice their offense, they were looking to increase their threes and play faster, and that was what was working for a long time. But it feels like that's already been, factored into the game. But yet offensive rating still continues to climb, and it actually comes down to tactically what's changing. And this trend was so interesting, and the way you presented it was so good that even JJ Redick shared it on social. We'll start there, actually. What's it like? Are you now famous? Are people like stopping you on the street on wherever you live? I know where you live. I don't want to.
Are you in LeBron? Like, are you texting LeBron now?
Yeah. Are people stopping you at Metro being like, yo, that's the guy JJ tweeted.
Hopefully all that's coming. You know, I get my invite onto the pod and swill wine with JJ and LeBron. That should be where all this is leading, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But no, I mean, it was super nice of JJ to share that, and definitely got more engagement than one of my niche articles or tweets would have gotten otherwise. So that was nice.
Yeah, I try to retweet your stuff about, like, hey, the floater range stuff. You and I, the two biggest Etuan Moore fans in the NBA.
Oh,
but yeah, I don't have the reach JJ has. In seriousness, though, so this gets retweeted by JJ Redick because it is a really good and thorough and smart look into how basically when we've reached the limits of geometry on the court, we've reached the limits of math on the court with 3 versus 2 versus 1, how do you continue to mine these efficiencies? So Joe, for anyone who hasn't read it yet, can you give us kind of the high level, you know, what our team's doing? How is offense able to continue to improve?
Yeah, so I think it's really a combination of evolving skill sets and evolving tactics. And as I get into in the piece, like, some of the evolution in tactics is really like a full circle effect where there's a lot of drawing on past concepts and systems, but melding that with these new age skills, which if you want to boil it down to kind of like two categories, to me, it's like the explosion of movement shooting to the point that every team just has like two or three, even the Raptors now, right? Like have two or three kind of deadly movement shooters who can get threes off in almost any situation, which allows you to run these kind of ornate off-ball actions to get these guys threes, even if they're running at full speed into a catch, into a handoff. And that has kind of paired with what I see as an explosion of skilled big men that have entered the league over the last decade or so. And that's helped change the geometry of some of these offenses where you look around the league and there are a bunch of teams who, like, their best playmaker is a big, whether you want to call them a center, a point forward. And that is allowing teams to go back to this offensive style where a lot of offense is being run through bigs, whether it's out of the low post, whether it's at the elbows, or whether it's at increasingly, I think, the top of the floor, where teams are running what they'll call like delay action, where it's sort of like a five out, everybody's behind the 3-point line, and the ball is getting swung to usually a center, like at the top of the floor, and they're running offense from there, whether it's going into the dribble handoff game, whether it's running sort of away screens, backdoor cuts, things like that. But they're benefiting from the way that the floor is spaced now, and they're able to use these concepts that have been around the game for a very long time that are trying to encourage cutting and movement and ways to essentially get to the rim. And now they're able to spread that out and incorporate the 3-point line as well. Whereas, like, you know, these kind of triangle concepts that back in the 90s were used in a lot of cases to generate open mid-range jumpers, they're now being used to generate open threes. So I just think it's like a very cool effect where you have like what's really become, I think, a very dynamic offensive environment. And it doesn't apply to every team. Like, there are teams with, like, if you have Luka Doncic on your team, you're still going to run a zillion pick and rolls a game because that's what he specializes at. But if you have Nikola Jokic on your team, then you're obviously going to run a lot of your offense through him at those various levels of the floor, the low post, the high post, or the elbow. And I think, you know, the way that my entry point, I guess, into this was just noticing from watching and then digging into it statistically that as much as the pick and roll is still very much like the staple food of NBA offenses and like the NBA's bread and butter play still, pick and roll frequency is actually down from where it was at just a couple of years ago. And it's being replaced by some of these different actions involving big men running offense from the top of the floor, involving more away screen action and more cuts and things like that.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, from a Toronto angle, this is exactly what's happened with the Raptors. Like, you're the biggest change offensively from where the Raptors were the last few years versus where they are this year. I mean, everyone can, even a more untrained eye can look at the Raptors offense and see it's totally different, especially now in the last month or so. I mean, it feels like Kelly's been the Raptors' leader in assists, and it's exactly what you're talking about, running all these similar actions. I guess my question to you is, like, do you think the Raptors are early, late, or just right on time with these adaptations? Because you did talk to Darko as well, in addition to, like, Steve Kerr, you know, Mike Brown, you know, Michael Malone, sorry. Don't want to call him Mike, mm-hmm. but, yeah. Where are the Raptors?
I wouldn't say they're, like, ahead of the curve on this, but I think they are reacting to, well, I mean, it's a couple things. I think you have to have the personnel to pull it off. And so I don't think if you look back at, like, the Raptors teams of the past few years that they were really set up to play this way. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, they weren't really set up to play this way at the start of the season. Like, I think we saw that, right? Darko came in with these ideas and these principles in terms of the way he wanted to run the offense, and it wasn't really working. Mm-hmm. And I think he actually recognized fairly early on that he needed to tailor things a little bit more to the strengths of the team. But I actually think the way that the roster has moved over the course of the season, it has very much moved in a direction where it's more aligned with his offensive ideology. Mm-hmm. And so looking toward next season, I think they're going to be really well set up to run the offense in the way that he imagined coming into this year. We haven't really gotten to see a lot of it because basically once they remade the team, almost immediately all these injuries happen, right? Like Ertl goes down, Scotty goes down, and I just don't think we're getting to see the full picture of what this team and this offense specifically can look like. But I think now they have the pieces in place, whether it's, you know, running offense through Scotty at the top of the floor, Kelly at the elbows, like, and having those movement shooters in Grady and Quickly, I think they're in a good position to execute on that vision.
So one of the things, like, defense is always trailing behind, right? Like defense is always trying to catch up. You are reacting to what offenses are doing. We're never going to have a defense that comes around and, like, well, yeah. I shouldn't say that. You know, to hear LeBron tell it via Eric Spoelstra or Eric Spoelstra tell it via LeBron, you know, Roy Hibbert's presence introduced some offensive revolution there.
But offense always has, like, first mover advantage, yes. Just like moving first in chess.
Exactly. Yeah. So as defenses are going to have to catch up to this a little bit. What can we make of the Sacramento Kings example, where last year they set a new NBA record for offensive efficiency? This year they're 13th. And some of that is everyone else got really efficient too. Like the Celtics with the best offense in the league right now score about 2.5 points per 100 possessions more than Sacramento did last year. But Sacramento has also come back down to earth a little bit despite good seasons pre-injury from Malik Monk. Domantas Sabonis is still Domantas Sabonis. What can we learn from the Kings example specifically of how quickly the league can catch up on both sides, like other teams doing what you're doing offensively, but also what you can maybe counter this with?
Yeah, I mean, as far as specific counters, I think we're still in the process of learning that a little bit. But like from what I've seen with the Kings this season, probably the biggest thing is just their pace, which isn't necessarily related to the schematic stuff in the half court that I mentioned in my piece. But like, teams have gotten really good at locking in on their transition game and slowing them down a little bit. I think that's been one of the biggest differences for them. And then I think just being a little bit more physical with them and not letting them get into their dribble handoff game as easily. And I think if we're looking for one lesson there, it kind of is, like, if you look at the Kings personnel, they have a lot of offensive talent, but that's not a team that you would look at on paper and say, oh yeah, that should be the number one offense in the league as they were last year. I think the advantage they had last year was catching the rest of the league flat-footed a little bit with a style of play that was a bit of a curveball, right? Like they're running more dribble handoff than any team in recorded history. And that's even up from where it was at last year. But like that style that they were playing with all of that delay action, all of that movement and cutting and pace, I think the rest of the league wasn't entirely prepared for it. And so now that the league has seen it for a full year and can adapt and adjust, I think maybe we're seeing a little bit like the limits of Sacramento's personnel, where like they had, like you say, that first mover advantage last year, and that allowed them to generate what was at the time the highest offensive rating in NBA history. The rest of the league has caught up. And like you mentioned, that's not just on the defensive side. It's also the rest of the offenses around the league borrowing things from Sacramento, recognizing that they could incorporate those concepts as well, and maybe passing Sacramento by because they actually do have more offensive talent. And now they have the schematic stuff in hand as well. But I think from a defensive perspective, and this is especially pertinent now with the way the points of emphasis have changed with the officiating, I think that physicality is going to be a big part of it. Mm-hmm. And if they're loosening up the kind of restrictions on freedom of movement off of the ball,
right,
I think that's probably going to be the number one emphasis for defenses and trying to slow this stuff down.
Yeah. We run out of time, unfortunately. That's what happens when we bring up the bench. You know, it's what happens. Jody Meeks only gets 2 minutes to shoot. You've taken those 2 minutes. If I give you 30 seconds on what do you think's the next innovation?
Ooh. I think To your point, I feel like the next innovation probably will be defense oriented because, I mean, right now, like I'm not like an NBA tactician. I can kind of see this stuff and react to it, but I'm not going to be somebody who's going to innovate on the tactical front at the NBA level. But I think it is now sort of like the ball is in defense's court, I think, to catch up to some of this stuff. And I think a lot of, like the way the defense reacts will dictate where offense goes from here. Because in talking to a lot of coaches for this piece, what most of them said was pick and roll play became ubiquitous. It became kind of predictable. And so the impetus was on us to come up with something that defenses weren't expecting. And so I think that's the way these things tend to go. And that's what we'll see from here. And we'll see how quickly defense can catch up.
Well, we know you will be there to write about it. And, I can't wait, honestly. Seriously, I got to give you your flowers, man. You, when you first came into this game, you know, it was a lot of, like, wonderful writing, and it always is going to be wonderful writing. It was a lot of tennis, but it was also a lot of, like, wow, I got to, like, crack open the thesaurus. Like, I just got to appreciate how beautiful the writing was. And now you've gotten and added this other element, too, of the analysis, the insight. Joe Wolfon, truly one of the best in the game. I appreciate you. And that does it for us today. I've been your host, Willu. You're listening to The Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spice Soup. Time to get fired up. Make sure you find The Raptor Show wherever you listen to podcasts. Rate, review, subscribe to the show. And thanks to all our producers for working on the show today. Thanks to our guests, Garrett Temple and Joe Wolfon. And we'll talk to you tomorrow.